Good day, this is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, February 17th, 2026. Starting with the front page of the commercial news, the first story today is titled, Danville Tries to Remove Blight Within the City. And this is by Christy Jankowski. Danville. Removing blight from the city of Danville by acquiring 24 vacant lots is a proposal on tonight's city council meeting. The city council will decide whether to approve an ordinance authorizing the purchase of properties and amend the fiscal year 26 budget accordingly. Logan Kronk, the community development administrator with the city, said the ones they are looking to acquire are not houses that can be saved. These are properties that are mostly on the way to, probably in most cases, collapsing, at least the roofs, Kronk said, noting the property taxes have been unpaid for 3 years before they make it to the Vermilion County trustee auction. Typically, whenever they sit for years, and they've likely sat before that, there's a reason these properties haven't had the property taxes paid on them, Kronk added. These structured properties are gone. Kronk said the properties then go into what he calls the hopper for our CDBG demolition fund. And if these properties are city-owned, the city can use grant funds for demolitions. This is a really good source for us to continue doing blight removal with those dollars, Kronk said. There's 24 lots. There were quite a few vacant lots on the surplus option in the city of Danville this year. Kronk said there is a strategy, but not one he is willing to disclose in a public forum. However, he did say that around 90% of the properties can be found in an East Main Street corridor plan. Kronk told the committee, "The others are in neighborhoods that lack other structures around them. So there is a logic behind each of these vacant lots, and there are 24 of those this year. The price did go up on a minimum bid. It was $1,000 per property and a $50 recording fee. So the grand total comes up to $56,700 to purchase 54 properties. Council will also be looking to approve an agreement between the city and Refit 9B Properties LLC. Kronk said during the Public Works meeting, this agreement is simply a change of ownership after Taylor Homes and Construction told them they couldn't finish the work. There was a redevelopment agreement that came to the City Council that was between the City of Danville and Taylor Homes and Construction, Kronk said. This resolution is essentially the transfer of what the prior redevelopment agreement was. It's the same exact redevelopment agreement with Refit Properties being listed in it. Kronk added that some tasks are already completed, and the agreement to build four houses remains on track, with all construction expected to be finished by December. There is one home that's already under contract to be sold, and it is on a tight timeline, so I believe Refit Properties is really going to push this along to get that one contract finalized. Kronk said, and one of these homes will already be sold as homeowner occupied. Our next story is Danville Rural Transit takes over for Chris, and this is by Christy Jankowski. Danville. Transporting patients outside of Danville to appointments is moving to Danville Rural Transit. Since the start of the new year, the City of Danville's Mass Transit Director, Steve White, has led the way in making sure patients get to vital dialysis appointments following the closure of Chris Rural Mass Transit. We're doing 148 rides a day right now. That includes WorkSource, CrossPoint, and the dialysis patients, White said. But without the scheduling software, we can't do any more. 148 rides a day on a spreadsheet is a lot of work. White added about the need to change the system. So you know, without this software, we can't do it. White added that getting into new software is vital. We're out in the county, just not servicing like seniors and people that need doctor's appointments right now, White said. That's why we need this. We can't put any more on paper, because we're going to end up missing somebody. It's just going to happen, unfortunately, because we're working off of a spreadsheet. White says they are not meeting the demand. When we're fully up and going, we'll probably average about 300 to 325 rides a day, White said. During the council meeting on Tuesday, the city is looking to approve a resolution that would authorize the city to acquire IDOT vehicles, as well as the approval of an intergovernmental agreement between the City of Danville, DMT, and the Sangamon Mass Transit District, SMTD. We're going to call it Danville Rural Transit, White said of the service to replace Chris RMT. So there'll be Danville Mass Transit and Danville Rural Transit. White said the agreement gets them 9 more buses and another van from IDOT. 3 of those buses and the van are in Springfield. That's part of the intergovernmental agreement, White said. They're over there getting fixed. 2 of them are ready, a van and a bus. So we'll be going over to get those. Total costs about $14,000, one of which is getting a new motor. IDOT will then put $18,000 into our CARES grant to offset that money, plus a little more. This is all the vehicles we're getting, because this is all they have. And White says the need for buses is essential. When we get these remaining 9 buses, we won't use any of ours at all, White said. Right now, myself or a supervisor is filling in when needed just because we don't have enough vehicles. Our final front page story today from the Commercial News is titled Making Ends Meet. Pritzker presents budget as state faces federal funding uncertainty. And this is by Ben Selinsky from Capital News, Illinois. Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker will stand in front of the General Assembly on Wednesday in a familiar position, confronting tremendous uncertainty over the state's financial future. Pritzker will present his 8th budget as he seeks re-election to a rare 3rd term and becomes a growing national presence as a possible 2028 presidential candidate and one of President Donald Trump's loudest critics. The Trump administration has put Illinois and other states whose leaders disagree with his vision in the crosshairs, targeting them for massive cuts to federal funding. In the last 2 months alone, that has included a $1 billion child care funding cut that's temporarily been blocked by the courts, and $100 million in threatened health care funding cuts. At the same time, the economy has been shaken by Trump's tariff policies, and Congress passed a sweeping domestic policy bill known as the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that will alter the fiscal landscape for states across the country. That measure cuts eligibility for Medicaid and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, increases administrative costs, and reduces what the state can collect in provider taxes. The ever-changing federal funding landscape presents lawmakers and Pritzker with a murky picture of the future, one that can change as fast as the president can send a social media post or a judge can issue a restraining order. The state constitution requires lawmakers to pass a balanced budget, and Pritzker will outline his plan for one on Wednesday. His annual budget address sets up months of negotiations, mostly between supermajority Democrats. They'll try to balance their desires to fund programs while revenues, both from the feds and the state's base sources, are projected to flatten at best. Representative Cam Buckner, a top House Democrat budget negotiator from Chicago, said one of the goals this year's budget will be to play defense. It's hard when the biggest variable in the budget is not something that you can control, he said, referring to federal funding. And with this president, the volatility isn't a possibility, it's a given. Pritzker and his team have already started setting expectations for a conservative budget, telling agency leaders in memos and signaling to legislators that it will be difficult for the state to fulfill funding requests this year. The governor's Office of Management and Budget estimated in October that lawmakers will have to close a $2.2 billion deficit for fiscal year 2027, which begins July 1st. Much of that deficit is driven by the state's own spending exceeding projected revenue. But GOMB projected changes at the federal level are making the problem more challenging and will further exacerbate deficits in the coming years. In the short term, Pritzker's budget office estimates income tax revenue for the state will be lower because of federal tax code changes and some administrative costs for food assistance programs that will be required this year. Most of the impacts of Trump's big bill won't be felt until fiscal year 28, but that doesn't mean it won't factor into this year's process. You can't ignore what is coming down the road, and so we should expect and work towards a proactive plan for next year's gap starting now, not after May, because the gap is being driven by forces that won't wait for spring, Buckner said. Dwindling federal funding is already starting to appear in the state's balance sheets. The Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability's January report shows revenue was 3% lower in January compared to the same month in 2025, largely because of decreased federal funding. Federal funding to Illinois has declined for three consecutive months, though the Commission cautioned there could be a variety of reasons for that, such as the timing of payments. In any case, federal funding was 35% lower this January than last, and is now down 8% for the year. Overall revenue for the year is still up 3.5%. It's not just federal funding that presents a challenge for lawmakers. The overall health of the economy does as well. A forecast by Moody's Analytics released last week set an ominous tone. Illinois economy is in a precarious spot. And a weak economy ultimately makes it difficult for revenue to naturally grow. Potential budget shortfalls in Illinois and the city of Chicago mean lawmakers may need to consider a mix of revenue enhancements and spending adjustments, measures that could ultimately stifle consumer spending, the report said. The forecast predicts employment will not grow or decline, and the economy will grow at a slower rate than other states because of out-migration, a shrinking tax base, and a massive long-term pension liability. Additionally, tariffs are hurting the state's manufacturers, and rural areas are suffering from both tariffs and higher farming costs. Illinois has a lot at stake, given its reliance on manufacturing and logistics, and its above-average exposure to foreign trade, the report said. Moody's said the results of Trump's big bill will be mixed by region, but the overall impact of the policy will be negative because it weakened social services. More broadly, Moody's notes an artificial intelligence bubble in the stock market could burst and trigger a recession. Lawmakers could also consider taking proactive steps to absorb new health care costs and cuts set to take effect in the coming years. Under a provision in Trump's big bill, one that applies only to states like Illinois that expanded Medicaid eligibility under the Affordable Care Act, a 6% cap on the tax Illinois can charge health care providers will gradually be cut starting in fiscal year 28 until it reaches 3.5% in fiscal year 32. When the lower cap is combined with a decline in federal aid for Medicaid, the state could lose $1.7 billion annually by fiscal year 31, according to the governor's budget office. The impending limits on Medicaid provider taxes will pose a significant challenge for lawmakers who will either have to find some other way to pay the state's share of the cost or adjust the program to fit within the new fiscal constraints. Since the federal changes do not take effect for another year, it is possible lawmakers will not feel pressure to take immediate action in the upcoming legislative session. And now we're going to turn briefly to the obituaries for today. We have only one and a couple of death notices. And our obituary today is for Mary Margaret McGowan. Mary Margaret Bloomfield McGowan, age 91, died February 12, 2026 at her home, surrounded by loved ones. A visitation will be held at Williamsport Christian Church, 20 East 3rd Street in Williamsport, on Saturday, February 21st, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., with a short service at 1 p.m., with Brenda McIntosh officiating. Our friends and family can then join us later at the Beef House in Covington from 3 to 6 p.m. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the Warren County Community Foundation in honor of Margaret McGowan. And in Tilton, the Vicki Myth visitation will be from 3 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, February 18, 2026, at Sunset's Urbis Chapel in Westville. Funeral services will take place at 11 a.m. on Thursday, February 19th, at the funeral home. Burial will be in Resurrection Cemetery. And that's the end of the obituaries for today. We're going to turn now to the sports pages for a story by Marvin Holman titled Missing the Details. Danville loses to Springfield in shootout. Danville. Competitive teams always seem to have the right details together in the right moment. But even though the Danville High boys basketball team have been competitive, the lack of details when the game gets tight have been a problem. That problem was shown again on Saturday as the Vikings lost 59-54 to Springfield at the Watchfire Signs shootout. "We have to be better," Danville head coach David Gord said. "We talk about the details every single day in practice and focus. It is down to a lack of focus. We come out of a timeout not knowing our assignment, not knowing our defense, and it is a lack of focus on this point." The first half showed some of the best play from the Vikings all season, as they had a 30-22 lead at halftime. "We have to put together four solid quarters," Guard said. "I wish we didn't have halftime some days, because it seems like our focus goes down after that." "I felt like we started rebounding, hitting shots, and boxing out from the tip," Danville senior forward Amir Beasley said. "We were doing the little things and the right things, and the score showed it. In the second half, I think we got a little laid back, and it was like the little things we were doing in the first half we didn't do in the second. We let them come back, and it became a dogfight." The dogfight started in the third, when the Senators got the score to within 42-37 after the quarter, and then scored 22 points in the fourth to get the win. Springfield's Logan Peach had 9 of those points, with Noah Wade getting 7 in the quarter. "Coach Kevin Cosley is one of my good friends, and he coaches like I do," Gord said. They kept chopping away until they took the lead and made it a dogfight at the end. Beasley had 23 points to lead the Vikings, while DeAndre Burns had 12 points and Kendon Mason had 7 points. "Him and DeAndre gets battered a lot down low, and they do a good job playing through," Gord said. "Amir battled past contact, and he's hitting the potential. One of our goals in the offseason is to hit the weight room because they have to get stronger and get better." Burns and Johnny Davis were plagued by foul trouble, but players like Jackson Gibson and Omar Sanchez came on and picked up the slack, combining for 5 points. "I feel like Omar and Jackson are great players, and when their time came, they did what they were supposed to do," Beasley said. "It's going to take everyone every game," Gord said. "They came in and had some solid minutes, and going forward, we will have to depend on that, because you can't totally rely on the top 5 that plays the most minutes. Guys like Omar, Jackson, and Kelvonta gave us some good minutes and held the fort down." Peach had 15 points for Springfield, while Elijah Wade had 13 points, and Noah Wade added 12. The Watchfire Signs Shootout entered its 7th season and had 12 teams this year. "It's growing, and I am glad we are sticking to it. We keep turning away teams sometimes because we don't have room," Gord said. "Hopefully we can have a girls shootout or a JV shootout. We have many ideas floating around, but Watchfire is doing a good job, and Mr. Mark Basis and Miss Megan Mattingly are doing a great job organizing it, and all of the volunteers make it a great event. We want to keep it going." After playing Springfield Sacred Heart Griffin on Monday, the Vikings will return home for senior night, where Davis, Modest, Arian Smith, Tylen Brigham, Corey Fry, Nate Forthenberry, Victor Jones, and Sean Cottrell will be honored. "We want to build momentum in the playoffs. We want to start stacking positive things before regionals. We put some things in the positive column, but we have to win on Monday and protect home court at least on Friday and get ready for regionals. We should end up on top and go 2-0 and end with a great game for our seniors," Beasley said. "I feel we can fix the problems in the next few games before regionals. When the regionals come around, we are 0-0. The Vikings were not the only local team in the shootout. Earlier on Saturday, Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin was in action against Rantoul and won 52-43. Kyson Peoples had 40 points for the Blue Devils, while Noah Rice and Elijah Tidwell each added 5 points. BHRA will host Westville tonight in a rematch of last month's Vermilion County Championship game. And returning to the local pages, we have a story from Medill, Illinois News Bureau by Erica Tulfo, titled Penny Shortage Causes Headaches for Retailers. Springfield. At the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield, visitors can shop for sweatshirts, pillows, jewelry, and chocolates using coins bearing the face of perhaps the most famous Illinoisan, Abraham Lincoln. But even here, pennies are growing scarce at the cash register. The museum gift shop, like the rest of the country, is grappling with a penny shortage after the United States Mint halted production of the coin in November, citing the rising cost of producing them. The lack of fixed guidance from the state and federal governments about how to cope with the shortage of new pennies has left some business owners scrambling to come up with ways to address it. Many retailers are just rounding up or down to the nearest 0 or 5 cent mark in their prices to make change. They will accept the 1 cent coins, but can't always pay them out. The retailer faces frustration on behalf of the consumer, said Rob Carr, president of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. Most retailers are rounding in the consumer's favor, which doesn't make the consumer mad, but it also takes profits out of the retailer and puts them at the narrowest end of the net profit margin. So every penny matters there. I think the absence of clear guidance at the moment is difficult. Some businesses, like the Lincoln Museum gift shop, display a guide on how its rounding system works. The museum, for example, rounds amounts ending in 1 or 2 cents down to 0. It rounds amounts ending in 3 or 4 cents up to 5, and amounts ending in 6 or 7 cents down to 5 cents. However, other business owners say this kind of multi-tiered rounding system can be inconvenient and confusing for customers. For many Illinoisans, there is a sad end-of-an-era feeling watching the slow disappearance of the 1 cent coin, which was one of the first coins made by the U.S. Mint after its establishment in 1792. President Lincoln's profile has been on the heads side since 1909, and that change made him the first president featured on U.S. coins in honor of his 100th birthday. Mary Disler has been working as a volunteer at the Lincoln Museum for over 20 years, since its founding in 2005. As a die-hard fan of Lincoln, she sees the decision to stop penny production as a sad but sensible decision. Next is a staff report titled, Hoopston Man Changed After Multiple Accidents. I think that's charged. Hoopston. A Hoopston man is facing criminal charges after leaving the scene of an accident where his pickup truck was hit by a train. Hoopston police stated in a report that Joseph Goodrum, 65, was charged with a DUI, or driving under the influence, leaving the scene of an accident and with the obedience to signal indicating the approach of a train or railroad track equipment. The accident with the train occurred around 9:10 p.m. near the West Thompson Avenue Railroad crossing. Authorities also discovered that Goodrum's truck had also struck a 2021 Ford pickup in the 500 block of West Main Street. Police say Goodrum was arrested after refusing EMS, and he was then transported to the police station, where he was released with a notice to appear in court. And that takes us to the end of our time for this Tuesday, February 17th, 2026. Again, my name is Greg, and as always, it's been a pleasure to read for you, and I hope that you have a splendid day. Take care.